The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Welcome to this recording of the American College of Osteopathic Internists Internal Medicine Board Review Course. The course was held in Baltimore at the Marriott Waterfront Hotel on May 8th through 12th, 2019. The course featured nationally known speakers covering a wide variety of topics of importance to the internist preparing for initial certification or for recertification in the specialty of internal medicine. Interactive identification of optic fundi and endocrine physical findings is presented by Dr. John Sutton.
So for this slideshow, what I'm going to do is go over some various images and physical findings. If you want to, there's going to be a question after each one, and then after we're finished with all of them, we're going to go over the questions. So if you want to write down your answers, you can do that. Okay, this is my patient from suburban Detroit, and the question on this patient is, why not give contrast? And if contrast is given, what would you call the response, the thyroid response, if hyper-HYPER or hypo-HYPO? Here's a patient of mine from Nevada. He had those facial findings, and he had these abnormality on abdominal examination. And the question is what is the diagnosis? It's question number two. So it's the facial findings with full facies and the divot behind his cheek. And what are the two primary screening tests in this patient for this diagnosis? One of my Nevada patients. And what is the most likely TSH in this patient? Low TSH or high TSH? You're very unlikely on the boards to get a true false, but you can, they definitely go by what is a fair question, and some of those are matching questions. So the circle sign there by the radiologist, feet towards you, and got that little plum on the end of the stalk. And the question is, if for an adrenal biopsy, what test is critical to perform before the biopsy? And would the result be more likely to help you with primary or metastatic diagnosis? So a primary cancer of the adrenal gland or metastatic diagnosis would be the most, biopsy would be most helpful. A patient of mine from suburban Detroit, she's overweight. She has darkening of the skin at her axilla, actually at the crook of her elbow there as well. And what is the skin abnormality and what is the endocrine diagnosis? This is a patient who was sent for a nuclear thyroid scan. And the question is, true or false, this scan is typical of Graves. So that's the scan, and the question is this typical of Graves? Which medication is most likely to be on this patient's medication list? This patient's hyperthyroid, and you see that scan, and the question is which is most likely to be on the list? Amiodarone, aspirin, Cardizem, furosemide, Inderal. This is a nuclear thyroid scan. Make note that in the neck scan, so the other spot images are specially focused on the on this gland, but in the anterior view, you can also see uptake higher in the neck. This is a neck image. And so what is the next diagnostic step? So if you see this on a thyroid scan, what is the next diagnostic step? Here's a lady in various stages of aging. And the question is what is the name of the physical finding? So specifically, hold on a second. Specifically, the finding of her thoracic spine. And would the T-score by DEXA, DXA, most likely be 2.5, minus 2.5, or 0 T-score? And Jack had said before that most endocrinologists are emphatic about a DEXA versus DXA, and the reason is there was a national/international conference on what to call it about 20 years ago. I was at that conference. It was made out by the International Society of Clinical Densitometry. So we get a little upset when we see DEXA rather than just DXA. Okay, we got another thyroid scan. Look at the background. Look at the activity in the thyroid. Similar one here. We've got the activity in the thyroid. The midline is on the left upper scan. The midline is to the right of the hotspot. And the question is what is the most likely TSH result? Low, high, or normal? And what is above the thyroid lobes in the image? So up there on the higher than the thyroid on the left, what are those structures there? So you get this image, and the question is what is the preferred next step in treatment or evaluation of this patient? So these are just reverse images of the same patient. Again, when you look at a thyroid scan, looking at the background, looking what's in the thyroid, looking what's near the thyroid. And the question is, which scan is typical of Graves? So is it the first scan here that's typical of Graves, or is it the second scan that's typical of Graves? When I took the boards for the first time about 26 years ago, they had an image that wasn't even a modern image of a thyroid scan. So it was what's called a rectilinear scan. And the only reason I even recognized it was because I had just finished my endocrine fellowship. So I think you can expect to see images, particularly of the thyroid on the nuclear. So is this one or is this one Graves' disease? This is a patient in the hospital. She has some changes on her shins. And the question is, what is this skin lesion? This happens to be a diabetic. Here's another patient from suburban Detroit, and she looks a little bit like this guy here too. And the question is what is the physical finding on eye examination, and what is the one best test for thyroid diagnosis in this patient? Here's a skin lesion. What is the diagnosis? So what does the skin on this lady's hands represent? And to what thyroid diagnosis is it most likely to be associated? Oh, let's see here. I think I'm missing a slide here. Okay, yeah. What is this physical finding called? This is a patient that's post-thyroidectomy. Another post-thyroidectomy patient. What is this physical finding called? And this physical finding. Blood pressure pump cuff up. Usually take it above the upper limit of their systolic blood pressure. Those slides of the eyes of those gentlemen, and then this lady here has an abnormal physical finding. What is the term used to describe this eye finding? So this gentleman has a similar in video too. So it does help to sometimes step back from the patient, have them sip water and swallow it, see if you can see any movement. Shouldn't really see any movement unless something's happening with the thyroid. What is the next diagnostic step? Have these patients. Hold on a second. So when you have a patient like this, like that, what is the next diagnostic step? This lady presents with a huge thyroid, and the question, the TSH is likely to be elevated, true or false? This lady presents with those findings, and the questions are, is that related to pregnancy or the adrenal glands? And is this pregnancy or the adrenal glands? Here is a nuclear thyroid scan. And this is a nuclear thyroid scan. And which of the patient is most likely to be hyper HYPER thyroid? So the first one or the second one? Now, in a testing situation, you're not going to be given information without an uptake. And in your office, they're going to give you an uptake. They're not just going to say, we did a thyroid scan. You're going to get uptakes. But you should be able to look at a scan and sort of surmise the uptakes, which is what they used to do in days of old. Sometimes they actually decided on an uptake based on just the visual. When you send a patient for thyroid scan with uptakes, though, they're going to give you a count and they're going to give you a normal range for the count. What is the most likely TSH value? Okay, let's go back here. Yeah, for that one, what is the most likely TSH value? This is is a hyperthyroid patient. She has some what's referred to as peau d'orange of her shins. And what is the physical finding called in peau d'orange? And I've not seen this, but in like this lady and maybe one or two other people in 25 years, so you may have never seen it. This is a lady with osteoporosis and multiple fractures. What is the diagnosis? Let's go back to her again. The diagnosis is based on her eye findings. And the question is when you find somebody with that physical finding, this lady, the question is what adrenal and what ovarian laboratory testing would you order to see if there was a problem that could be treated? So the one of the main founders of this course was Dr. Burchett. He was my one of my internal medicine professors when I was at Kirksville. And one year he told me, you need to put some slides of the retina on the picture show, so to speak. And so I considered that a strong hint. This is a relatively normal retina. And the question here is, what are the little spots outside of the vessels, and what is the what are the little spots outside of the vessels, and what disease state are you looking at? Major medical disorder that all of you see regularly. And this is, on this retina, what are the white spots? And these white spots. Important here is the location of these particular white spots. Here is, so there's lots of extra vessels here. And so the question is what does this retina represent? Here you have you don't have a retina, but you have progressive findings that have extended to the iris. What are these little bars, red bars on the retina? And here, the white spots around the periphery of this retina, what do those white spots represent? These various white tufts. What do they represent, or what's the diagnosis? These two slides go together. So what do these represent? This is a close-up view of it. Okay, now we're gonna go back through the slides and address the answers. So this lady has a multinodular thyroid, which typically present, as do goiters and nodules, euthyroid, normal thyroid function typically. So one of the things that you should think about is it possible that giving her contrast could do something? And this isn't thought about very often. In fact, we get called after the fact, after a contrasted study. Contrast could induce hyper-HYPER thyroidism. So you can't have a euthyroid patient that all of a sudden is hyper, that you know has a nodular goiter, and the iodine from contrast could provoke it. If it is hyper, that provocation is called Jod-Basedow phenomena. So giving contrast causes somebody to be hyper is Jod-Basedow, and hypo-HYPO-thyroidism response is Wolff-Chaikoff. Obviously, the hypothyroidism is less significant, but one of the things that I do when I have an unclear case on either is I ask them about iodine. Now, sometimes with contrast, they won't either know they got contrast or whatever. You might have to dig a little harder. But in some cases, these situations resolve and they don't need any treatment. So before you do the next CAT scan with contrast, you want to feel the thyroid just to make sure that you don't have a goiter going on or something like that. And this kid was the one that had the steroids for brain tumor, and he had full facies and stria. And his diagnosis is Cushing's syndrome. So so exogenous steroids, endogenous steroids, no matter where they come from, all of those are Cushing's syndrome when you get a presentation like this. But if it's in the pituitary, which is the most common tumor-related, it's called Cushing disease. And these are looking at his cheeks. And we call those chipmunk facies, where there's puffy cheeks with a little divot behind them. Cushing syndrome is screened utilizing 24-hour urine-free cortisol or a 1 milligram overnight dexamethasone suppression test. And in endocrinology, we've gone back and forth over the years. The common reason I would do a urinary free cortisol, though, is if the person's on estrogen. So I do get referrals for high cortisols on patients that are on estrogen. And so you can't really adequately assess serum cortisol with estrogen on board. This lady told me that she was one of the first persons to get radioactive iodine. And although her most likely TSH was low because she looks hyper, she had already been treated and ablated and was on Synthroid at this state. But she had persistent thyroid eye disease. So the most critical test to perform before an adrenal biopsy, first of all, don't do a lot of adrenal biopsies. We don't do that usually. You usually can sort it out. But if you do, then you want to make sure that it's not a pheo. So you don't want to stick a needle into a pheo. Now, again, as I said in the lectures, you win most of the time, even if you do, because there are very few pheos in this world. I've only had 3 to 4 of them in my entire 25-year career. Looked for a lot of them, but adrenal biopsy is best at defining a metastatic lesion. So if you stick a needle in the adrenal gland after you've proven that it's not a pheo, you won't get adrenal cancer as one of the answers. They might say there's adrenal tissue or there's hyperplasia, but they can't tell cancer from a needle biopsy of the adrenal gland. They can tell metastatic disease from that, though, so, which is the most common. This skin abnormality is acanthosis or acanthosis nigricans. And the endocrine disorder would be prediabetes or insulin resistance syndrome. I wasn't actually seeing that lady for diabetes, but I do see people for other conditions and identify acanthosis and later do glucose testing to try to exclude a diabetes diagnosis. Okay, this is supposed to be the thyroid. This is a nuclear scan, okay? And in this case, the little dots there on the left-hand image, the little dots are to tell the clinician that the patient is, that's where the suprasternal notch is. So the suprasternal notch is there. You can see the head easily enough. But if they give you only on the right, then you wouldn't know unless you had ordered the scan that way. So this is a nuclear thyroid scan. Thyroid is poorly visualized. And the question is this typical of Graves? And the answer is false. It is not typical of Graves because you should see a booming production of uptake of radioactive iodine. Which medication is most likely to be on this patient's med list? So this patient here, as I said in the lecture, is it's either iodine contamination or it's amiodarone. So potentially, if the patient had gotten a CAT scan with contrast before the scan, most time the nuclear techs catch those and can keep that from happening and you're doing a test for no good reason. And keep in mind that with amiodarone, months and months later, the iodine content can still be present and cause that low uptake. It makes the thyroid diagnosis very complicated. The next diagnostic step from that image where there's a biot of the thyroid, I like to say that's the biot of the thyroid. There's above the thyroid there is on the left is salivary glands. If you have a thyroid nodule, first and foremost, you check thyroid function, okay? So you don't want to have a thyroid nodule. Now, you'd be surprised at how many nodules I get where there's no thyroid function. So the doctor feels something, and so what you're going to do in your office is you're going to feel something, and you're going to order a TSH, and you're going to order an ultrasound all at the same time. But once you have the... once you think you have a nodule, the next step is TSH. And then generally thyroid nodule, a thyroid ultrasound is important because you don't want to assume that the nodule that you see or feel is the only one. And this is not screening. You're looking at the rest of the thyroid to see if you see something. And this applies also to when you see a nodule on a CAT scan or PET scan or some other test, you want to go to the ultrasound to tell the sort of the true story. We would biopsy a cold nodule or any other suspicious nodule. And keep in mind that we don't do nuclear thyroid scans to see if a nodule is hot or cold anymore unless the patient's hyper. Most common biopsy is benign. And the most common malignant biopsy is papillary. This is a Dowager hump and represents a spinal compression fracture typically. Most likely in these patients, the DEXA is low. In patients that have a relatively normal or slightly low bone density in a patient, like this patient, aging patient, you want to use the Frax tool like Jack noted. I actually just, every time I need to use it, I actually just Google Frax and that website comes up. You put in the data to see if a patient that has osteopenia might qualify for treatment. So we have one of those nodules with increased activity. This is an autonomous nodule, and the TSH is typically low. And salivary glands demonstrate are up above the thyroid in that image. Okay, on the upper left there, and when you can see the salivary glands, the uptake isn't very high. So generally, Graves patients, you can't see the salivary glands easily. What is the preferred next step? And the next step in the hyperthyroid patient would be radioactive iodine or surgery. If the patient has a multinodular, toxic multinodular goiter, surgery is preferred. If the function is normal, you may not need any kind of intervention. So generally, if the function is normal, we don't do a nuclear thyroid scan on those patients, even if we feel a nodule as endocrinologists. So this is the Graves patient, where you see very little background. This is not a Graves patient. You see a lot of activity around the thyroid, and the thyroid activity is a little irregular. No background, diffuse, not irregularly, irregular, a more intense uptake in the thyroid gland. This is a diabetic in the hospital, a pretibial lesions or shin lesions are referred to as necrobiosis lipotica, and can be seen in diabetes, but it's probably more common than we realize even as endocrinologists. This lady and this gentleman have periorbital edema, and the TSH is expected to be high. This patient has vitiligo, and the thyroid diagnosis is Hashimoto. Hashimoto is the most common thyroid diagnosis in first world countries, and iodine deficiency in third world countries. This is pseudomyotonia. The uptick is okay, but the downward swing is slow in hypothyroidism status post-thyroidectomy. This represents Shavastic sign, hypocalcemia. More severe hypocalcemia, you have carpopedal spasm when you pump up the blood pressure cuff, limiting blood flow to the distal upper extremity. Some people, even as severe as her hypocalcemia was, she actually recovered from that and did not have persistent hypocalcemia. That's referred to as Trousseau's sign. These patients all have eyelid retraction. Some of them have proptosis. Some of them have just eyelid retraction with no proptosis. We measure it with what's called an exophthalmometer. This patient had external radiation. She had a nodule. Here's another patient. This is a good reason to do an image where they sip some water and you swallow it. If you don't have them swallow, feeling their thyroid, in this guy's case, his nodule was basically substernal until you have him sip and swallow. Another good trick is to have him lay down to feel the thyroid in supine position as well as the upright. The next diagnostic step, thyroid upper ultrasound is important to define one or multiple nodules for size and physical characteristics, then biopsy large or suspicious nodules. So the TSH is first, and then additional imaging. And if the TSH is elevated, that makes the nodule more suspicious. Every nodule has its own significance is a good rule of thumb now, rather than multinodular thyroids. Each nodule doesn't mean much. We don't use that terminology anymore. This patient has a goiter, and goiters are most likely euthyroid. This particular patient had a goiter and was still hyper after two radioactive iodine treatments. But in general, goiter is euthyroid, TSH normal. Those are pregnancy related. These are steroid related, we said, adrenal gland. So scan number two is the most likely hyper. Again, you're looking at the scan. The uptake is most likely high because there's very little background compared to the other scan. TSH low. This skin finding is seen peau de orange skin texture in the pretibia. This is referred to, oddly, in a hyper-HIPER thyroid patient as pretibial myxedema. So myxedema is actually low thyroid, but pretibial myxedema is seen in hyper-HYPER thyroid patients. And I've only seen this once or twice in my career, so. This lady has blue sclera. She had osteogenesis imperfecta and blue sclera. She had multiple fractures for all her lifetime for no particular reason. If you see a patient with hirsutism, you should get at least a DHEAS and a total testosterone. Normal retina. This is a retina that represents background diabetic retinopathy. So background diabetic retinopathy is dots and blots without neovascularization. So you can have actually a lot of dots and blots. They tend to be peripheral rather than in the macula. This is our exudates. These are exudates in the macula, which makes them worse. So, and that's what happens in diabetic eye disease, is that it happens peripherally and then in the macula typically. So exudates in the macula are particularly bad, but you don't have to have diabetes necessarily to get exudates. And all these extra vessels is what you've heard of as neovascularization. So extra vessels to take care of oxygenation in the heart are good. Extra vessels in the eye are not good because they're weak and they bleed. That's referred to as proliferative diabetic retinopathy, neovascularization. This is actually sort of neovascularization to the max. It actually came from from the retina all the way into the iris. I've never seen this. This is a borrowed slide. Neovascularization of the iris is a bad. Those are dot, blot, and flame hemorrhages. I don't think you have to know the difference necessarily between them. These little white dots are maybe a passing thing in diabetic eye disease because they're using a lot of other treatments besides laser, but these are laser hits peripherally. Cotton wool spots, those tufts of whiteness. And this is AV nicking. That's back to the normal retina.